Well, good Wednesday to you. Middle of the week. It's been a very bizarre few weeks, mostly because of sad deaths, unexpected, and then some not so unexpected. But it's been a crazy couple of weeks of losing people and going to funeral homes and paying your respects and going to funerals. It was so busy, I actually went to a funeral home a week early, and I have to tell you, Mike Parsons, there's nothing weirder than a completely empty funeral home, no cars, no nothing. You go, where is everybody?
Yeah, that is bizarre. I mean, here's the thing, and not to make light of the situation, but at least you didn't walk into, like, the wrong viewing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's an awkward thing. That is, it may have happened to me, but it had to have been years ago, where you come in and you go, geez, I don't recognize anybody here. And then you look at the person lying in state and you go, I didn't even recognize them.
Right. You know what happened to me one time, Paul? I used to deliver pizzas, and I had to deliver pizzas to a funeral home, and I walked into the wrong door, and it was the embalming room.
Oh, wow.
So I found an employee and said, where's the lobby?
It's quite a shock, though.
But
I have to tell you, I'm a little envious because I've often wondered what, you can't help yourself, you wonder what that whole room is like. I've heard so many different explanations, you know?
Yeah. It looked like just your normal medical room, and I walked in and, you know, there was one of the people, and I'm like, oh, I don't think this is where I'm supposed to be.
You mean one of the people, like...
Yeah.
Being prepared?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And it was obviously a shock because that's not what you thought you would be seeing, even though I was at a funeral home.
We're not used to that sort of stuff, that's for sure. All right. Well, I hope, I don't know if, it, no, no, Buzz Van Houten's is coming up. I'm so confused. But this is, today is Joseph Welch's day. When Linda Apsey, the fine president and CEO of ITC Holdings, only the second one, after Joe Welch, who started this thing, Joe is just a pioneer and a swashbuckling guy. I mean, they don't, when you say there aren't any guys made like Joe Welch anymore, that's true. That's kind of like what it was like for Bob Rossiter.
Right.
These are guys that were one of a kind, and they were great for their time, but probably wouldn't have done as well during these times. Now, I don't know about Joe regarding that, but he founded ITC Holdings, and he basically bought the company from his former employer, DTE, and the rest is history. It's just grown and done well, especially under the guidance of Linda Apsey after Joe retired after the Canadian-based Fortis acquired ITC. Joe was a fierce competitor. He was a great hard worker and a great player, and it's easy to say that in retirement he worked as hard as he ever worked. He started his own racing team, Joe Welch Racing.
Wow.
He even won a few NHRA events. He loved putting the pedal to the metal with his drag racing.
Very diverse.
Very diverse, a very strong-willed and unusual fellow. And whether you knew Joe as a husband, dad, grandpa, uncle, boss, friend, benefactor, or mentor, he would you could always count on him. He left a big impression. His family will strive to continue his legacy proudly. The funeral is underway right now as we speak at Christ the King Catholic Church on Ave Maria Drive in Ann Arbor. We just wanted to, we mentioned him before. I wanted to give another shout out for him today. Well, we're underway with now what we hope to have as relentless positive radio. Again, it's not easy with everything going on around us, but the team is ready. Mike Parsons, who you've just heard from, our executive producer, Daniel Mason, running the controls, Rich Luzinski, WJR Traffic and Weather first, and keeping track of Broadway and musicals and whatever else he might be writing. You can stream us at WJR.com. You can get the podcast if you can't be here noon to 2. Get the podcast at WJR.com. Look for me, Paul W. Smith in Focus. As you're on your way now to making each and every day count, each day is a gift. We know that more than ever, and we know what Kim introduced us to, my beautiful wife, Kim, QTR, quality time remaining. We have no idea how much we have. Make the most of it. I like to say, because I lived like this was a dress rehearsal. This is it. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is life. So, like in the old days, if I bought a really nice suit, and I didn't have a lot of them, but I bought a really nice suit, it would hang in the closet waiting for that really special occasion.
Right.
Then when the special occasion came, the suit didn't fit anymore. Anyway.
You're waiting for your life to start. Congratulations. Already started.
It's underway, my friends. If you can learn that young and also learn to invest early, I don't care if it's 10 bucks or 100 bucks or 1,000 bucks. If you do it on a regular basis, you will thank me long after I'm gone and you're dealing with retirement. So just do that, do that, do that. And thanks again for being an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. I think it's about time we start to talk about our parents in our area, not in the area of the horrific flooding. The numbers change constantly.
Yeah.
Marie will be here to talk. I'm going to say over 119 dead, over 161 missing in Kerr County alone. So the numbers are higher than that. But, you know, we all mourn the fact that many of them are children. I mean, we mourn the fact that anyone died, but mm-hmm. that many of them are children. And what we must understand and realize is that our children are now very much exposed to all of this. And you think it's hard for us to process? It's very hard for our children to process. Imagine being a parent who's about to send their kids off to camp.
Right. Well, and here's the other thing, too, Paul. That camp, cell phones were banned. And so
I've never been a fan of banning cell phones.
Me either.
You know that. I've said it a million times in schools and everywhere else, but you go ahead.
No, I you and I are probably in lockstep here. We need to get over this fantasy that we have in our society about banning cell phones. Yes, I know they can be annoying. Yes, I know a lot of times people have their noses buried in them when they should be enjoying the people around them. But when it comes to banning them outright, it's a safety issue, and that was proven here in Texas.
I agree. And look, I'm not saying that they should run wild with their cell phones in schools or camps or anywhere else. You have to teach discipline.
Right.
Because you tell them you can't use your phone right now. You can have your phone, and if there's an emergency, you have to use it. But if you have your phone, you have to learn to not use it. And you have to be a disciplinarian in school or anywhere else to keep kids from using it.
If I'm a parent, I am not sending my child anywhere where they're not allowed to have a cell phone. I have to be able to have that access to them.
I think that's wise. I think it's very wise. Let's end on a very happy note for a very nice guy. His name is Jim Sievert. He has owned Village Ford in Dearborn since 1982. And he is one of the distinguished Ford dealers to win Ford's prestigious Triple Crown Award. And I believe he has won that award or won just like it for 17 consecutive years. This is an accomplishment big enough that the great Ford Motor Company CEO Jim Farley personally showed up to present the award to Jim Sievert. July 8th, that happened to be the day Ford ended its employee pricing and then the campaign to shift to the 000 summer sale. Pretty good. The sale features zero down payment, 0% interest for 48 months, and zero payments for the first 90 days on most Ford and Lincoln vehicles. That certainly will help a lot. Jim Sievert, Village Ford, occupying the dealership that Henry Ford originally built in 1947. Is that possible? It was called Stuart Wilson Ford until Sievert bought it in 1982 and renamed it Village Ford. It's barely 4 miles from the Glass House, Ford's world headquarters, and it got its namesake by its proximity to Greenfield Village, according to Jim Sievert. Jim Sievert, congratulations, my friend. The only thing that would make everything better is if you start advertising on WJR, including on this show. I'll do a great job for you, Jim. I promise you. Congratulations as we continue in focus on WJR. Have you ever wondered why health insurance costs seem to keep going up? I was doing some research online and came upon some, what even to me is surprising information on Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan's website, miBlueDaily.com/affordability. miBlueDaily.com/affordability. I was surprised to learn that the cost Blue Cross pays for prescription drugs rose by a staggering 15% last year. 15%, five times higher than inflation. It's no wonder healthcare costs are a concern for so many of us. If you want to learn more, you go to miBlueDaily.com/affordability. But might I also recommend you look for Tricia Keith on the cover right now of D Business Magazine, and they're writing about the good fight, the good job she's doing to underscore the fact that affordability matters in healthcare. Tricia Keith, president and CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, affordability matters in healthcare. Look for her on the cover of D Business Magazine and a good story explaining what I'm talking about right now. And that's why Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan is working hard to help all of us better understand the factors driving up healthcare costs and sharing what they're doing as a business to address it. Because Blue Cross knows that healthcare is personal, needs to work for everyone, and affordability matters. So I encourage you to take a minute, check out miBlueDaily.com/affordability, and get informed. Pick up D Business Magazine with Tricia Keith on the cover for further information. You'll be glad you did. It's eye-opening information that can help everyone better understand the complexities of the healthcare system and its impact on your health insurance costs and mine. 1216-760-WJR. I recommend a book that I think is well worth reading, and the Civility Book, A Guide to Building Bridges Across the Political Divide, by our next guest, Nolan Findlay, and his friend, Stephen Henderson, with Lynn Goldner, is one of those books that I highly recommend. It's easy reading, quick reading, and I hope that you'll pick it up wherever you get your books, online or, my goodness, even at a bookstore still, especially the small ones, because they'll have the best books, the small individual bookstores that still exist. Keep them alive. The Civility Book. Anytime I can get a giggle out of Nolan Findlay, I feel I've done okay.
How you doing, Paul? Thanks for the plug.
I'm doing well. Thanks for the book. And I talk about timely. And I know it takes time to write a book, so you started this a while ago, but it right. couldn't be better timed for the way we're facing the world today.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's going to be true for a long time, Paul. We don't seem to be getting any better at living together, working together, and solving problems together.
Well, let's talk about some of those issues that are out there now, mm-hmm. some resolved but won't be readily acceptable to some. The Supreme Court filing, or rather lifting, a lower court order blocking President Trump's executive order requiring government agencies to lay off federal employees. To me, it's a no-brainer. I mean, he is the boss, and he should be right. able to decide how big certain organizations he's overseeing should be, I guess.
Well, I mean, the executive branch should have some authority to manage government and to put in place cost-cutting measures when needed. If not, you know, we're going to hit a point where there's no way to get a handle on this kind of spending. And so, you know, we know a president can't or shouldn't be able to, under the Constitution, say, hey, we're going to start a whole new program and fund it without congressional approval. But he ought to be able to not spend money in a time of economic crisis without having to submit it to the congressional process.
Well, and if it's as bad as people keep saying, oh, the world is going to come to an end, well, then that gives the Democrats an opportunity to say that they can do a better job and show us how. But until that happens, I think it's kind of ridiculous. And the problem is, and I was watching this on one of the shows, what do you think of the big, beautiful bill? Oh, it's really bad. Why? I don't know why. Well, I'll tell you why you think it's bad, because the mainstream institutional media continues to carry the water for the Democrats, even in their failures, and tell us it's bad before it's even happened.
Well, I'll tell you why I think it's bad, Paul.
Good.
It spends too much money. I mean, we still...
and that's not what they're worried about. They're worried it's not spending enough money.
Well, I know, but we should be... The people, we should all be questioning why we're still running up and adding to debt and deficits that are going to soon very quickly overwhelm us. And that lack of urgency in dealing with the debt, that's not what Republicans promised. They promised and they made a big show of Doge and Elon Musk, and that seems to have all gone out the door. And, you know, once again, they're claiming, well, we made spending cuts. Well, it's not a spending cut if you're taking that money and spending it somewhere else. That's a spending shuffle, and that's all this bill does in terms of addressing runaway spending. So, you know, I've got no objection to telling able-bodied people in this country that you got to work to get benefits. You know, I remember back in the 90s when John Engler did that here, and everybody said, oh, my God, the word's gone in because – he's asking people, able-bodied people, to take jobs that were available in the economy before they got on welfare and before they got on Medicare and other benefits. And, you know, as it turned out, that was not near the humanitarian disaster everybody predicted. In fact, it worked out rather well and had been working rather well until Democrats took power again and undid it. So, I mean, we've got to look at this as a spending problem, and I'm afraid this big, beautiful bill, you know, fell short of doing that.
You know, every time I see a full-page ad with people saying, we believe in immigrants, look at what all immigrants have done in this country. They want people to believe that Republicans or conservatives are against immigrants. They're not.
No, we need immigrants.
We need immigrants. I'm from an immigrant family. You may be. I don't know. You know, Tennessee, foothills of Tennessee. I don't know if you were an immigrant.
But, you know, and it's Kentucky. But
I'm sorry, Kentucky. Bourbon. Yes.
You know, we need immigrants. We need a lot more than we've got coming in. I mean, we've got places now where the harvests out in Washington State, the cherries are going unharvested. That'll happen in Michigan this season. I mean, we need to bring immigrants to do that work. But what we also need to do is stop supporting Americans who won't work with taxpayer money.
Right.
I mean, if there are jobs available and they're not taking them, then that's where the public welfare should end.
Your take on the FBI launching their investigations into Brennan and Comey?
Well, I mean, there's certainly two guys who abuse their authority, and you know, we know that they were out to get Donald Trump. Now, whether they were out to get him in a way that, you know, they manipulated the levers of power and weaponized government agencies, I think that's a question that should be asked and should be answered.
And finally, the Detroit News has made its voice heard for the upcoming primary, and who have you decided would be best to fill the shoes, the very big shoes of Mike Duggan?
We like Sontel Jenkins. We think the former council president, CEO of Thaw, has the experience, the maturity, the integrity to do this job well and to continue the forward progress that Detroit has been on. We can't afford a stall here. We need someone who can, you know, continue the business relationships, can continuing focus on neighborhood redevelopment, and keep downtown booming.
Well put, Nolan Findlay, editorial page editor of the Detroit News, author of the latest book, The Civility Book, A Guide to Building Bridges Across the Political Divide, written with his colleague, friend Stephen Henderson and Lynn Goldner. I wish you well, and I hope that everyone will pick up this book and read it. Across the country, we need The Civility
Me too,
Book.
Paul. Me okay. too. Well, thank you. You're very kind. Appreciate
All right,
it.
Nolan. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk again soon. 1229 at WJR. You know, there's nothing like summertime in Michigan. Well, there's also nothing worse than the summer heat creeping into your home. Stay cool and comfortable this summer with the help of my friends at Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. The next generation is in, still owned by the family. That's not just a name. Dan Pelko, Crystal Klempert Pelko, the next generation of family. There's no one I trust more because, well, I know that family and have for years. I know the company. They've done work for me. I know none of their people work on commission, and trust me, that does matter. If it's time to replace your AC unit, Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical can help you take advantage of energy rebates for qualifying systems. If you're not, if you've listened, know that I've always been supportive of the police in every form. We need them. I love them, and I know how hard their job is. I thought it would be, when that moronic defund the police idea came around, that was just so moronic and so wrong, and I thought, this is how we thank those people that put their lives on the line for us every day. Well, we get past that, and frankly, it's still an incredibly difficult job. Hence the press conference with Mayor Duggan earlier this week to announce the curfew enforcement after a string of shootings involving young people. And so they're working with faith leaders to combat gun violence and working with the fabulous Detroit police and all different law enforcement. We couldn't be in better hands than with our Detroit Police Chief, Todd Bettison, who is kind enough at this busy time to come on board with us and talk a little bit about the newly introduced Summer Safety Teen Violence Prevention Plan. It's just sad we even have to do this, Chief.
Paul W. Smith, thanks for having me on. You know, our teens, it's summer. We typically see an uptick in violence because, you know, teens are out of school. And so it's definitely necessary, but I would just like to let the listening audience know as well that overall in the city of Detroit, crime is down in every violent category. It's down. My homicides are down 19%. My non-fatal shootings are down 32%. I mean, that's 110 fewer people shot. Number's still too high, but, you know, it's down year over year. Even our carjackings are down 20%. And so the outlook when it comes to crime is going down. But when you hear about situations where we have a two-year-old or a four-year-old shot and killed at a park, you know, that just shakes the whole community.
Yeah. I'll tell you, what has to be talked about, as uncomfortable as it might be for some, the parents are going to be held and should be held accountable for their minor children who are doing bad things, who are breaking curfew, who are caught with guns when they're not supposed to have them. All these different things. There are responsibilities to having children, and we're going to have to make the parents live up to those responsibilities.
Absolutely. Just looking back since June 15th in the city, we've had 12 juveniles that have been shooting victims and who shouldn't have been outside. They were out after the curfew. And so that's the reason that we're stepping up our curfew enforcement and we'll be giving parental responsibility tickets to the parents. And the mayor is going to be putting in an amendment to city council to change the ordinance to make sure that the fees are increased. And so I'm taking a proactive stance. And I've already implemented it as far as putting all officers and making it a priority that they enforce the curfew, not just downtown, but citywide.
Well, as the mayor said, I'm sure you agree, the behavior of these kids, for whatever reason, gets worse and worse, and it's multiplied when we see large groups of young people congregating. You've asked again, if you see something, say something, do something, call the police. If in the community you see suspicious activity or large groups of young people congregating and these illegal block parties, they shouldn't be called parties because they almost always end up in somebody pulling out a gun foolishly and shooting.
Yeah, in the city of Detroit, you can't play loud music and take over streets. And, you know, we have a thing where after 10 p.m., you know, the music can't be amplified and disturb the peace. But these block parties and the folks are going into the wee hours in the morning, and as a result, I have a detail, a mobile field force that responds. And over the July, the 4th of July weekend, they actually busted up over 120 illegal block parties. And it, we get it. Everybody was out. It was hot. They were celebrating the 4th and going into the July 5th. But we, our officers were busy. We busted up a lot of those parties. And the mayor has now authorized overtime for the mobile field force detail to go from 3 a.m. now to go to 5 a.m. So Mayor Duggan, he's really given me the resources that I need to do what I need to do to make sure that we're doing proper enforcement and keeping the citizens of Detroit safe. We're definitely going to ensure that we take a real proactive stance to curtail this type of activity. We're not going to tolerate it.
Our great Detroit Police Chief, Todd Bettison. There's been an authorization for overtime for the police officers assigned to monitor and handle late-night calls for disturbances, drag racing, large gatherings outdoors, basically community violence intervention. I don't have a quick answer as to why it seems to have gotten worse and worse. You want to hazard a guess?
It ebbs and flows, but I will tell you, the parents, know where your kids are. When we were younger, Paul W. Smith, we remember the ads, the public service announcements that would say, it's 10 p.m. Right. Do you know where your children are?
Yes, you're right. Good reminder. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we need more of that. And if it's 10 p.m. and you don't know where your children are and they're out and my police officers encounter them, well, you can expect a parental responsibility ticket as we make the phone call for you to come pick up your juvenile.
How does that work, a parental responsibility ticket? How much is something like that?
Yep, so the first offense for that right now is $75, which is not enough in my opinion, and that's the reason that Mayor Duggan is putting in an amendment so that it goes to city council to get the first offense up to $250, and the second offense would be up to $500.
Wow.
So that can start to get folks' attention.
Yeah, I was going to say, that should sure get your attention. Listen, you guys do such great work day in and day out. We only hear about things when they go wrong or bad. We never hear about the daily good things that your officers and all the men and women you represent in the Detroit Police do on a regular basis that we take for granted. I'm going to ask you this, Chief. How's the morale for the team right now?
Officer morale is up. I'm in a good spot. My police officer morale is up. My community morale is up, too. They're standing up. And so everyone's really supporting and coming together and saying, no more. We're not going to tolerate this type of behavior. And so I'm really in a good spot. And the community is cooperating as far as giving me tips. We're catching everybody. And the community is speaking up, and they are talking. That what happened at the fireworks, for example, that unfortunate shooting where an individual based off a $250 beef from the city of, I believe it was Romulus, and another kid from Romulus, they decided to get into a fist fight, and ultimately one made the bad decision and took out a gun and shot him in the leg and had a stray bullet hit another individual. We just apprehended him a couple days ago, and the community gave us tremendous tips. And so, like I say, we're apprehending individuals, and we're going to do a thing to proactively, when it comes to the curfew enforcement, looking at the data to ensure that we take kids out of positions where they can either be the victims or perpetrators of violence.
One last quick question, and I've asked it before over the years. Is there anything you need that we might be able to help you get that will help you and your officers do a better job? Would you let me know, please?
Right now, just we're really pushing the House bill version for the Public Safety Trust Fund, which will allow me to hire more police officers and invest in community violence intervention with our credible messengers, which is helping to lower crime in the city of Detroit. And it'll be a good thing for the state of Michigan as well. And so the House has passed a bill called Public Safety Trust Fund. It's House Bill 42, I believe it's 4260 and then 4261. And that's good for the police, and it's good for community violence intervention.
Good to know. Good to know, too, the Detroit faith leaders always there calling for a ceasefire after the string of shootings involving teens. Stop the violence. Keep up the good work. Detroit Police Chief Todd Bettison, you're always welcome here, my friend.
I thank you so much, Paul W. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. As we continue on WJR at 12:44. It's about 12:52, a little rain out here. Nothing at all like the rain we've been watching on the news. And aren't we fortunate? And we have all of those people who have suffered so tremendously in our thoughts and prayers. The numbers are going to keep changing, but the last I heard, over 100, 117, 19, I'm not sure. There's a lot of people who are dead. Over 161 missing. That was in Kirk County alone, from what I know. Now, 5 days after the catastrophic floods hit the Texas Hill Country, searchers in helicopters and on horseback continue to scour Texas flood debris for the missing. In addition, now we add three people, at last count, dead following flooding in New Mexico. WJR's Marie Osborne joins us with the very latest. Good afternoon, Marie.
And hi, Paul. So authorities in Kerr County, Texas, say these search teams are combing through the debris. They are looking for more than 170 people who disappeared in these waters. Right now, the death toll stands at 111 people. But as you said, that number is definitely going to go up. That's according to authorities in the area. And some new details are emerging surrounding the emergency preparedness of Camp Mystic. That's where 27 campers and counselors died in the floods. Texas inspectors signed off on Camp Mystic's emergency planning just 2 days before that flooding on July 4th. The Department of State and Health Services released the records showing that the camp complied with a host of state regulations, including procedures to be implemented in case of a disaster. And among them was instructing the campers on what to do if they needed to evacuate and assigning specific duties to each staff member and counselor. It's very early in this investigation in terms of what happened. Right now they are trying to get a handle on recovery on people who remain missing, but they are going to do an in-depth look into what happened and the failures that may have taken place during this catastrophe. Now, in New Mexico, monsoon rains there. This happened in southern New Mexico. It triggered flash flooding. It killed three people, a four-year-old and a seven-year-old boy. And it was so intense that an entire house was swept downstream in a mountain village that's very popular right now as a summer retreat, Paul.
This is so overwhelming. And when I saw that story earlier, getting prepared for our conversation, that 2 days before the flooding, the state inspector visited Camp Mystic and certified that it had an emergency plan in place.
Yeah.
But I keep hearing that the way this water rose and to the degree that it did, nobody ever could have guessed this was going to happen. Even though they had flooding problems, was it 1987, I think?
Exactly.
And the area is called a, what do they call it? Not a floodplain, but something like that. That it's a flash flooding area or something. They were aware of the problem, but nobody ever would have guessed that Mother Nature would have unleashed the way that she did. And anybody who is politicizing this and blaming President Trump, I mean, that's just off the charts. At a time like this, when we're still trying to rescue and worse than that, just to try to find the people who are no longer rescuable, to then try to politicize it, turn it into anybody else's problem is a very sad and unfortunate thing. And speaking of that, I'm watching the news over the last few days. I mean, it's endless, obviously. And I hear about these twins that died in the flooding. And just as I'm hearing the story on television, I'm reading a feed that comes on my phone that these, in fact, were the twin granddaughters of former Free Press publisher David Lawrence Jr.,
that is
among
correct,
the
yes.
dozens mm-hmm. killed by this catastrophic flooding. Twins. Now, I knew I knew David Lawrence Jr. You've been around long enough. You probably knew him, too, when he was mm-hmm. running the Free Press.
Yes, 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 indeed. Tragedy hits close to home, that is for sure.
It really hit close to home with the death of the twin 8-year-olds, Hannah and Rebecca Lawrence, of Dallas. Now, have you ever sent your kids to camp?
I have not. I did not send my kids to camp, but I did go to camp.
You did?
I did. And this was long before cell phones. And I do remember someone in my cabin brought in a transistor radio, which was contraband, so we didn't tell anybody. So, you know, so we had a transistor radio. Not that that would have helped us.
So you could listen to WJR and learn how to do the business. That's what it was, wasn't it? Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, but I just want to quickly tell you, Scott Larimore, we talked to him yesterday from the Weather Channel,
right.
And he's told us that more people are killed in flooding than in tornadoes every year. So he said, you have to take very seriously the threat of flash floods.
We have a lot of water. We have a lot of water around here. Yeah.
Yep. You must take it seriously.
Well, so noted. I appreciate that. Always appreciate your good work. WJR's Marie Osborne with the very latest. And trust me, she'll have updates throughout the day. Thanks, Marie. We continue in focus. Hour number two coming up. I hope you'll stay with us on WJR. Welcome into hour two for this middle of the week, Wednesday. The rain is on again, off again. It appears to be off again, at least where we are right now. You can stream us at WJR.com and have crystal clear coverage around the world. And you can also listen to the podcast if you can't be here noon to two when we're here live. So I hope you'll go to WJR.com and find the podcast as well. When we do our best to give you relentless positive radio more times than not. And the team, Mike Parsons and Danielle Mason is joined today with Ashley Gresham. Ashley, nice to have you helping out as well. And Rich Luzinski with our WJR traffic and weather first. As you're on your way to making each and every day count, each day is a gift. And as Kim introduced the idea of QTR, it means so much, especially lately. Quality time remaining. QTR, we have no idea how much of that we have. Thanks again for being an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. They make this a breaking story. I don't know if it means anything, but they'll make something of it as the Musk stories continue. The CEO of Elon Musk's X has abruptly resigned.
Yeah, after 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years of running X. Linda Yaccarino, which is meaningless. I probably could have said the name and said, for $1 billion, who is Linda Yaccarino? God bless her. Hope she was paid well. And who knows why she abruptly, as they put it, resigned after just 2 years. Isn't very long, is it?
Yeah, I guess she used to be a high up at NBC Universal, and then she went over to Twitter X or whatever we call it now.
But I don't even know what it is. How about this? Or as they used to say, how about them apples, which I don't think I ever really said. But Buddy's in Detroit claims to have originated the square pizza with crispy caramelized edges in 1946. And Buddy's made the top 10 pizza joints in the United States list.
Wow.
And I just want to point out, this is Food & Wine's 10 must-visit pizzerias in the United States. Now, I don't know about you, but when I see something like that, I pay attention because I love pizza. I love pizza. Not afraid to tell you.
And it really does seem like Detroit-style pizza has been trying to separate itself from, you know, Chicago-style pizza, because people used to always kind of lump them together, right?
Yeah, I always thought of Chicago-style pizza as deep-dish pizza.
Yeah, well, and a lot of times people call square pizza here deep-dish, and I think that's where you kind of get the overlap. But they are very different. I mean, Chicago-style pizza, it's almost like a pie crust.
Let me say one thing, though, that is pretty phenomenal. As I looked at this list, Food & Wine's 10 must-visit pizzerias in the United States, I was in New York City I mean, I've been there back and forth a lot over the years, but I worked there from 85 to 90. So hard to try to remember going back these things, then 90 to 96 in Philly before coming back home. But I already had about 10 or 15 years time here at the radio station, off and on doing weekends and fill in for JP and the Focus show. So I just did all the math, and I'm at about 50 years association with this great radio station.
Wow.
Be that as it may, between 85 and 90, when I was in New York, the pizza place that I loved was called John's of Bleecker Street. And do you know, this many years later, that is number one on Food & Wine's 10 must-visit pizzerias in the ICC. It's still there.
Really?
John's of Bleecker Street in New York City,
now,
number one.
Now, is it what we normally think of New York pizza, like a big flat slice that you fold over?
Honest to God, I don't remember. It was just really good pizza. I'm going to say it was just normal, regular, round pizza.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
The only reason they fold it over is because they cut the slices too big.
Right. And I hear it's the, what is it? The people say it's the New York City water that makes
That's what they say about bagels. That's what they say about a lot of things. But Buddy's is on that list, and we should be proud. Buddy's is number four.
All right.
So one is La Industry in Brooklyn, Bungalow by Middlebrow in Chicago, Buddy's in Detroit, number four, Frank Pepe Pizzeria Napoleana in New Haven, Connecticut, Raza Pizza, Quarter Sheets in Los Angeles, Out of Sight in San Francisco, Rose Pizzeria, Berkeley, California, and Lovely's 5050 in Portland, Oregon. By the way, that's right above a fabulous story about the fabulous Ryan Ermani. The headline, popular Fox 2 personality joins WJR. That's right.
All right.
He follows us at 2 o'clock, and we'll talk to him coming up in less than an hour. He's a all-around great guy that's been loved over at Fox 2 seemingly forever.
Yeah.
And he's keeping the Fox 2 job and doing now JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani. So that was in the paper the same time I saw the pizza thing. So I got a twofer out of that one. Two for the price of one. I got to talk about another great place. You know, after we had a wonderful memorial for Patricia Ann Thomas, our Ann Thomas's beautiful mother, who left us June 28th, Patsy, we went to do what you do oftentimes after a funeral. You go get a bite to eat.
Right.
You meet with people and all of that. Well, what an experience it was for me as I went to a place I'd never been to before called Janetti's Hole in the Wall.
Yeah.
I had never been there. Well, I walked in. This is on 108 East Main Street in Northville. Janetti's.com. Genetti's.com. Janetti's. I hardly recommend them because the food was just so good. It's called a hole in the wall. It's Janetti's Hole in the Wall, and it's fabulous. And I could make a show out of finding great little family businesses all over within the sound of my voice that you might not know about, but I want you to know about them. Maybe we should do that.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Maybe because then we'd eat well, Mike.
Right.
I did that for a cable station years ago. I don't remember. Dining Tonight. I don't remember what it was called.
Well,
but it was, I went around to places all over, like in Florida, everywhere. And we did stories on these restaurants. But let me just say about Janetti's, and I'm going to be honest why it really stuck with me. Because I walk in, and I am greeted by Laura Janetti, who acts like she knows me. Now, I know I've never been there on East Main Street in Northville. I just never have been. As it turns out, I talked to Kim. She'd been there before, but I had never been there. And Laura Janetti walks up and greets me like I'm old family.
It's great service.
And it turns out she recognized me as a WJR guy, and probably from the Victor's television commercials. I wasn't famous until I started doing Victor's television commercials. But Laura is a regular listener. And then when I sat down, my server, Patty, fawned all over me, saying, "I listen to you all the time." And I went, "Wait, I'm coming back here. This is fabulous. You mean noon to two, you listen?" Yeah. And then I find out that Jenny, the cook in the back, tells everyone to be quiet because noon to two, she's listening.
Wow.
To focus. And I was just so taken by this.
We can be the official radio show of Jannetty's Hole in the Wall.
Maybe that's what we should be. A landmark since 1971, Jannetty's originally started out as a meat and grocery store. In November of 1979, the owners, John and Tony, opened their restaurant when a hole was knocked out of the market's side, giving birth to Jannetty's Hole in the Wall. And in 1981, the restaurant was expanded to the building next door. Fall of 85 brought yet another expansion with the downstairs dining room, bar, and gift shop, later converted to provide additional dining space. And then Jannetty's Little Theater, which is just next to the restaurant, is accessible through yet another hole in the wall acquired in 1992. Their dinner, theater, and banquet facilities, 54 years of family business. I salute you, Laura Jannetty, Patty, Jenny the cook, and all the rest of the family there. I love good family businesses, but I especially love the good family businesses that listen to WJR.
And downtown Northville is such a great spot.
There's it's a great spot.
So much going on, so many great businesses down there. They do a lot of stuff, you know, around the holidays and around Halloween. We don't live close, but we try to visit a couple times a year.
Well, it's all because, frankly, funerals that have brought us all together. That's the only reason I was in Northville, for Patsy Thomas, my Ann Thomas, our Ann Thomas, mom. And then I was in downtown Plymouth, which I don't get to very often.
Another
that's a
great,
lovely downtown.
Yeah, Kellogg Park right there. I mean, those are two of the best downtowns in Metro Detroit, maybe even the state, I would say.
Let's blow this pop stand and travel around doing stories on these great places.
Sounds good. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, we have to make a living, though, so maybe we should still blow this pop stand.
The Focus Lunch Club. Let's speak it into existence.
The Focus Lunch Club is a fabulous idea, but, you know, my ideas don't always go anywhere. I always wanted the morning show official coffee from my friends at Absolpure, and we never got that going. We could have had coffee mugs and all that stuff.
We'll kick
this
around.
I like this, the Focus Lunch Club. Why not? Every week we could go somewhere else. Well, wait a minute. That's too much work. Never mind. Daron Levin is coming up in just a moment. Stay with us on WJR at 1:15. Well, thank you, O'Neill Stevens, who joins us now with that WJR traffic and weather first. And always a pleasure to speak to my friend Daron Levin. You know him as, well, a freelance journalist. He was born in Israel, served in the Israeli military, as did his wife as well. And he always he travels to Israel. He calls us from Israel. You know where he stands on all of this, but we want to know where he stands on the relationship now and the meetings. President Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu, Bibi, met for a second night to discuss a ceasefire deal in Gaza. And Daron, I appreciate you and your insight, and just wondering, by the way, would you vote for the president for the Nobel Peace Prize?
I don't think I'm on the committee, but let's put it this way. Whatever you think of him, he's certainly done more for peace than a lot of people who've already gotten the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's well put. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But how do you think things are going?
Well, they're clearly at a deadlock right now. Everybody's very frustrated. The president definitely wants peace. He wants an end to the fighting in Gaza. Netanyahu wants that as well. But all of Israel and Netanyahu want to get the hostages back. The Hamas have probably fewer than 50 hostages at this point, some of them alive, some of them dead, but everybody needs to be returned. But they also understand that these hostages are their insurance policy, and they don't want to give them up. And so they pretend to agree to certain proposals for ceasefire and for peace. And then as soon as it gets close, they back off or impose more stipulations or more reservations or more restrictions And the reason is because they understand that once the hostages are back, they are going to be out of commission in Gaza. They have to leave, or they're going to be destroyed. The Israelis are prepared to deport them, to send them to another country, but Netanyahu and I think the Israeli people are really not ready to allow Hamas to emerge from everything that's happened in the last 3 years, still in control of the Gaza Strip.
And you cannot blame them.
No, of course not. I mean, they've said they want to eradicate Israel, and they said as soon as they get a chance, they're going to do it again.
Which is, I'm glad you mentioned that, because it has to be pointed out all the time to these people who are saying, you've got to stop doing this. Well, you talk to these people who are continuing, like Hamas, to say they want to destroy Israel. If you think that Israel's going to stand by and say, oh, okay, that's okay that you want to destroy us, wipe us off the face of the earth, drive us into the waters, you go ahead. I mean, how stupid can people be in not putting the blame where it belongs, all on Hamas?
And the pressure is really growing on the Israeli public, because the price of this in terms of blood is terrible. We had an incident yesterday in which 5 soldiers were killed by an improvised explosive device, an IED. And Americans know what this is because we faced this in Iraq. What's happened in Israel now is that there are probably very few new munitions, if any, flowing into Gaza. Israel's closed off the border around Gaza to prevent smuggling, but there's a lot of unexploded ordnance from the last 3 years, and what's happening is a lot of that is being crafted into these improvised explosive devices and set as booby traps, and nobody wants to send their sons into that. This is the flower of sons and daughters. Nobody wants to send their sons and daughters into this environment. So the pressure's on in Israel to really come to terms with the Hamas, which so far is acting like it hasn't been defeated.
And you don't wonder where Netanyahu stands. He makes it very clear with another quote, "We are determined to achieve all of our objectives. The release of all of our hostages, as you mentioned, Doron Levin, the living and deceased, and the elimination of Hamas's military and governing capabilities, thereby ensuring that Gaza will never again constitute a threat to Israel." That's pretty plain and simple and to the point.
It is, and you would think that everybody in Israel thinks that way. But as a matter of fact, it's even more complicated, because there is a segment of the Israeli public that says, forget about trying to eliminate Hamas, make a deal, get the hostages back, stop fighting, and if we have to deal with them later on, we'll deal with them later on. And Netanyahu does not accept that, nor does his coalition. So there's some division in Israeli public opinion about that as well.
Where do you stand on that? Where does a former officer in the Israeli military, your beautiful wife Adina, where does she stand on that?
We stand in the same place. We agree with Netanyahu that Hamas cannot be allowed to rule the Gaza Strip under any circumstances. It's not fair to the future of Israel to allow those people to threaten it.
All right. Well, we'll follow it along and see where it goes next. We'd like to believe that there's some chance of getting all this worked out sometime soon, even though it's gone on forever, really.
Please God, as they say, please God.
Please God, or as I say, from your lips to God's ears.
Thanks,
Doron
Paul.
Levin, freelance journalist, born in Israel, served in the Israeli military, all-American Doron Levin, my good friend. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul.
It is just about 129 at WJR. Well, I'm glad that we've got an expert here to talk about something I know so painfully little about, and that's AI. I just I just don't know, and I'm going to find out. We're going to find out together with Brent Yax. Brent Yax is the CEO of Aucom Technologies. And if a guy like, as I would guess, as protected and hermetically sealed off from this kind of activity, if a guy like Marco Rubio can be impersonated, if they can impersonate the Secretary of State using AI, contacting a number of high-ranking foreign officials, none of us have a chance here against AI. Brent, welcome back. And I just got to figure out what is going on. I mean, this guy, as the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, has got to be surrounded by protection that we don't even dream of personally.
Well, thanks for having me back, Paul. Yeah, I mean, you're right, physically, right, speaking. But the situation that had happened, recently here where AI was being used to impersonate his voice, all you need access to is just him speaking to be able to create some of that, impersonation of his voice. So there's a plenty of him speaking out there, and that's all it really took.
Well, that's true for any of us, for example, who make a living on the radio.
It's very true. Now, the tools that we use here commonly in the United States have things saying we have to have permission to do it. But, with AI, there's other places that don't have those restrictions. And just as easily as I can mimic my own voice in AI, I could mimic yours in AI. I could mimic Marco Rubio's in AI. It's a matter of, 15 minutes worth of work.
Astonishing. Let me back up just a little bit and ask you, Brent Yax of Aucom Technologies, how can we, the average people listening right now, use AI to our advantage? Or does the average person not really stand to benefit from using AI?
Well, I think there's a ton of advantage for everybody. There's, tools out there like ChatGPT, Grok, which is, one that's been under kind of the fire lately, a number of these tools where you can go in and have conversations with it. You can ask it for help. You can ask it to do research for you. I actually had it plan my daughter's 10-year-old birthday party because I don't know what 10-year-old girls like, to plan that party. So there's a number of things that we can individually use it as and for business to simplify and do work for us. So there's a lot of tools.
I don't have it, of course, right in front of me. But I read about somebody, it might have been a lawyer, who got in trouble for using AI for his, I don't know if it was his summary or his defense or for whatever, but they used AI and he got in trouble for that. Why would that be?
So I've heard similar stories too. And, one of the things that ChatGPT does or these AI systems do, and what they're supposed to do is make stuff up. So you have to be very careful when you're using it that what it's telling you is actually true. So in a case of like putting together case law or putting together closing arguments in the legal industry, you got to make sure that what it's telling you is accurate and it's not just something that was made up completely.
That's crazy. It makes stuff up and tells you like it's like fact.
It does, and it's very hard to tell. And they're getting better and better at it. We used to call it hallucinations, where it would just come up with something completely random. But you just have to verify. And a lot of people say trust but verify. I say don't trust and verify.
Okay. And you mentioned a moment ago Grok, which I had never heard of until reading about it today, getting ready for our conversation. Brent Yax, CEO of Aucom Technologies. And the first line says, Elon Musk's Grok AI chatbot praises Hitler. And I'm going, what do you do? Where do you go from there?
Yeah, so Elon Musk has always been a proponent of free speech in terms of, his media personality. And Grok is kind of the tool that he's pushing for AI. And so, a lot of people like to be on the leading edge. I think he likes to be on the bleeding edge. And so these things do come up. And I think he's sort of the personality that just says, I'll ask for forgiveness and just keep pushing the boundaries.
Wow. All right. And let me ask you a question that I don't know that, well, maybe people do ask you this, but you don't sell stock and you don't tout stock. But for those of us standing on the sidelines and being told basically on our social media by people we don't know or even trust that we are missing out on the greatest investment opportunity in our lifetime because we missed out on Amazon, and well, I can go through, I don't want to go through the list, it's painful, but that AI is something we should be investing in. Is there a company that you believe in that we should be, I know you're not a stockbroker, and I'm just asking your opinion, the company that you like a lot that we might take a look at?
You know, I do think there's a great opportunity. I think I was on before and you called me relentlessly positive. So I think there's some great AI opportunities out there. I really do like, you know, OpenAI, which owns ChatGPT. They're the ones that are getting a lot of investment right now. They're the ones that people are paying a lot of, you know, money into right now. They're growing substantially. I mean, it's a really cool platform and tool. So if they ever make that shift into going public, I think it's worth really keeping an eye on them.
OpenAI. Which is not yet public. All right.
They are not. They are not.
Thank you, Brent. You know we'll be talking to you again. And by the way, if something comes up, and you just let us know, too.
I will. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it, as always.
Well, I appreciate your expertise. Brent Yak, CEO of Aucom Technologies. I mean, Marco Rubio getting impersonated. The Secretary of State of the United States. If they can do it to him, you know they can do it to us. It's crazy. This is the wild, wild west right now, my friends. There are disadvantages, but there could be and should be some advantages as well. As soon as we hear about more of them, we'll pass them along. You never know. 143 at 760 WJR. I think it's pretty safe to say there is nothing like summertime in Michigan. It's also safe to say there's also nothing worse than the summer heat creeping into your home. Stay cool and comfortable this summer with the help of my friends at Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. There's no one I trust more because I know the family. They're still the family. Dan Pelko, Crystal Klempert Pelko, the next generation of family. I know the company. I've used them. I know none of their people work on commission. If it's time to replace your AC unit, Family Heating, Cooling, and Electrical can help you take advantage of energy rebates for qualifying systems. If you're not quite ready for a replacement, their non-commissioned, trusted services technicians can tune up your existing air conditioning system. Visit familyheating.com to call one of their three locations and to schedule a free, no-pressure estimate today. With locations in Garden City, Madison Heights, and White Lake. They've been serving Southeast Michigan for over 55 years. I have stood by them and with them for almost all of that time. Don't wait till something goes wrong. Check it out now. Visit familyheating.com. Familyheating.com to schedule your free estimate and checkup today. Heading toward 145 at 760. WJR. Well, getting close to the new Ryan Ermanni show, and it's a good one, man. It's really a good one. We'll get to talk to Ryan in just a moment. A couple of quick news things we didn't get to today. Doesn't it seem almost unbelievable that Hegseth would put a pause on weapon shipments to Ukraine without saying anything at all?
Yeah, and I think
to the president.
Yeah, and I think when they asked President Trump about it yesterday, and he said, "You tell me." I think he generally did not know until the news broke here.
Well, I think he didn't. I'm pretty sure he didn't know.
Yeah, I mean,
but you have your Secretary of Defense making such a decision in such a well-viewed, watched, whatever situation.
Right. And how many strikes is this now for Hegseth? I feel like he's on strike five.
It's a lot of strikes when you think about it. But this president doesn't ever like to admit he made a mistake. And by getting rid of Hegseth, it's making, you know, it clear that he might have made a mistake.
Right.
But I seriously, I don't know Hegseth. I've never known him. How could you possibly do something that stupid?
Yeah. I mean, you think it would have to go up to the chain of command, and the final, you know, rung in the chain of command would be the president. I mean,
hard to believe.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, that's a huge decision in one of these two wars that we're involved in.
That's got all the attention of everybody around the world. And he just decides to do it and not say anything. I don't know where that's going to lead, if anywhere. The president apparently seems to be on the same page that all of the rest of us have been on for years. And that is, when Putin speaks, it is meaningless.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The talking BS line.
That, Trump accuses Putin of talking BS, only he didn't use the initials.
Right.
On Ukraine. What?
Well,
are you kidding? I'm shocked.
I think it took the President Trump a little while to realize that Putin was flattering him. And he said something like, he's a nice guy when you talk to him, but it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, I think we all know that and knew that, but him.
I think Putin probably knew how to play the game with this president for a while, and it's finally wearing off because he's not getting as far in these negotiations as he thought, right? Everyone keeps playing that clip of him saying, I'm going to end this war on day one, and obviously that we're probably not any closer to an end of that war.
Oh, here's the story I was trying to think of with Brent Yaks. You sent it to me. MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell's lawyers are fined for AI-generated court filing.
Well, and this is...
Why would that be?
Well, I don't know if there's a law against that, but, you know, in the past, there have been people who've been caught using AI in their court briefs, and the judge found out because you know, a lot of cases that they used for precedent never happened. They were made up by the AI. So at the very least, it probably puts you really behind the eight ball with the judge.
Well, it did here. They got in trouble, and if the AI is just supposed to help you do better or whatever, I don't know. It's confusing as hell to me.
It said the brief that Mike Lindell's lawyers filed contained several errors, including citations to non-existing cases and misquotations of cited cases.
As Brent says, it makes things up.
Right.
First of all, if you had AI assist you, why wouldn't you go through it with a fine-tooth comb before you turn it in?
I mean, especially because, you know, if AI didn't make the mistakes, you wouldn't have a need for human lawyers. So at the very least, to justify your job, go through it and make sure everything's accurate.
Oh, boy. All right. I haven't made a big deal out of this, and I've been remiss in not doing this because I joined TSA PreCheck years ago. So I haven't taken my shoes off.
I knew you'd like this story. I knew you'd like this story.
Well, now TSA is going to let everybody keep their shoes on at airport security checkpoints, which then gets everybody remembering the shoe bomber from the Detroit area and saying, well, are we as safe anymore? Well, I can tell you that the equipment we go through now and are tested on, believe me, it's reading all the way from your toes to the top of your head.
Right.
And it is now apparently able to see if there's any kind of contraband, explosives, or whatever anywhere on your body, including in your shoes.
Yeah,
that's what I'm guessing.
I mean, if it can see what you look like under your clothes, it could probably look under your shoes.
And I look very good under my clothes. I just
right.
wanted to point that out.
So no sir, problem. Move along. Stop admiring yourself in the X-ray
I'm
camera.
Standing there saying, can I stand here for just a little longer? Now they say Pam Bondi says missing minute from Epstein footage happens every night. So they were complaining about looking at the Epstein footage, and at exactly the same time every night there's a jump and a missing minute. And she's claiming, and it seems to make sense, that that happens every night because it resets.
Right. Which that sounds like a problem that should have been taken care of a long time, especially if people know that you miss a minute of footage every night. You can do a lot of stuff in that minute.
Yeah, there you are. Hey, big show coming up. In his first official week, JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani. Nice little mention in the newspaper, Ryan. I mentioned it on the air earlier.
Paul W., the reaction from me to me joining this radio station, I cannot believe how much fanfare this has gotten. I have heard from my friends that I went to St. Veronica with in East Detroit, Michigan, now East Point, Michigan. I mean, people I haven't talked to in 20 years who live in California, who live in northern Michigan, who live all around the country, they saw this and are so happy for me to be a part of this. And I'm just having the time of my life through 2 days.
It's all downhill from here, my friend.
Here we go.
But I'm here to tell you the things I have said I mean. You sound like you have belonged here all your life. And not everybody does, but for those of us who've been around me nearly 50 years on this radio station in one form or another, we welcome you because you are what WJR stands for and has been for 101 years. So I'll let you go. Show's coming up. Jay Afternoon, Ryan Ermanni. I'm Paul W. Smith. I'll see you tomorrow. Regards.